Today's guest is Jim from Route to Retire.
Jim and his whole family, they're moving to Panama very soon. They live in the U.S. right now, so they're deciding to pursue the expat lifestyle. And we talk to him in detail about how he's doing that from a financial perspective. And we also talk about healthcare, because I know that's a hot topic right now. And I'm excited to share what he says with you guys.
Welcome to Fire Drill Podcast, where side hustles, savings, and creativity lead to financial independence. With your hosts, Gwen from Fiery Millennials and Jay from Millennial Boss.
Welcome to another episode of Fire Drill Podcast. Today's guest is Jim. Welcome to the show, Jim.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
And by guys, he means my co-host, Jay, who's also joining us. Welcome, Jay.
Hello.
So, Jim, tell us a brief 90-second story of your life. Ooh. Go.
Wow. Nothing like being put on the spot. Why don't I tell you this? We have just made a lot of big decisions in my life, and we're going to be leaving and moving to Panama. So we've been making some changes. We just sold a rental house. We're being a little stressed out, I guess, by all the things we're realizing that we need to do to actually make this happen. It's going to be pretty crazy.
So walk me through this rental property selling process. How did it go for you?
I know you're in a similar position, and more similar than you know. This was my first rental house and my first go at it, and that was from 2003. And I didn't know what I was doing. And I bought this house not even understanding the numbers or anything like that. I was one of those guys that thought, hey, you know, as long as I cover the mortgage, we're good to go. And I got pretty lucky. I did okay. We ended up having about a tenant in there for about 9 years, but it was not in a good location. In fact, there was a shooting right outside of the place.
Wow. We do have a lot in common.
Yes. We had initially lived there for a few years, so that was not that fun. We got out and started renting it out. 9 years later, we decided when they left, it was time. So we just sold that about 2 months ago, and it was interesting. Luckily, we sold, you know, at a good time in the market, but being in the area it was in, we took a loss from what we sold it at, but I was okay with that. In the long run, I think we came out ahead. So definitely a learning experience.
Yeah, definitely. So I actually just listed my property for sale on Monday. So was that a week ago, less than a week ago? So I bought the property for effectively $82,500 about a year and a half ago. And I listed it for $99,900. Because that's what the realtor thought it was worth in that market. And I was a little skeptical that we could get that much. But I was like, you know, it doesn't hurt to try. I'm always down for a couple extra $1,000. So I did get an offer. I got an offer this morning, actually. And I'm waiting to hear back on the offer. So the person that sent the offer in offered $90,000. Plus I cover closing costs and prepay 3%. So that would be effective price of like $87,000, which would either net me no money or leave me with little money when I got the sale done. So I countered back. I left his concessions in there, but I put the purchase price back up to the list price. So I'm okay with giving him 3% of that, but I can't take $10,000 off and give him $3,000 on top of that.
How long did you own that one, Gwen?
Less than a year and a half.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Not the greatest neighborhood. There was shooting in my backyard. The property needed a ton more work than I thought. And I'm just ready to be done. I don't want to deal with it anymore.
We're like two peas in a pod on that one.
Two peas in the pod. Jay, how's your rental property going?
So we're putting it on the market on Friday. And we decided to go with Redfin, which I'm really excited about. So far, the process, because we tried to sell it 2 years ago and it didn't sell. And the process of going with Redfin and then going with a realtor is pretty much the same. So I don't understand why more people aren't doing this, but I guess we'll find out. And in my market, Redfin will sell your home for a 1% commission instead of
3%.
Wow. Wow, that's way better than I'm paying.
Saves a lot of money. So we decided to put it on the market for 515. Really, I wanted closer to 520. And we bought it in 2014 for 420. So that's significant appreciation, but it does align with what the Colorado Springs market is doing right now. The only issue is that another house in the neighborhood just went on the market for $525. So that can be a good thing that our house is priced less than theirs, or maybe we didn't price it high enough. I don't know. I'm still kind of second guessing myself there, but we'll see what happens. My husband's been putting tons of time into it, and we've dumped a lot of money into it. I would say we've dumped probably 15K over the last 3 weeks into it.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Jay, maybe you'll get lucky. Maybe with it being priced lower, maybe you'll get some competitive bids on that to move the price up.
Yeah, that would be awesome. So we're hoping that there's a lot of foot traffic too with another house in the neighborhood bringing people. And they're on the market now, and we're not going out till Friday. So we'll see. But this will be an exciting week for us.
All of us.
Mm-hmm.
So we have another thing in common, Jim.
What would that be?
Do you remember last year when I was asking you a whole bunch of questions about Panama?
I do.
Yeah, so I went to Panama for less than 24 hours last year. I wish that I had been able to spend like 24 days there. It's just so beautiful and amazing. But I asked you a whole bunch of questions about Panama because you are my local Panama expert. How did you get to be so knowledgeable about Panama, and why is that place so important to you?
Well, I wouldn't push it and say so knowledgeable, but I have been digging into it for a number of years. I've been wanting to leave my job for a long time. And that was one of the directions that I started looking was, is there a quicker way to do this? And then I started down the course of looking at different places of retiring abroad, and everything kept pointing back to Panama. You know, I mean, it is probably the richest, I guess, of the countries in Central America, thanks to the canal, which definitely means we have some U.S. ties to it as well. I guess that's a good and a bad thing, but I like the economy. I like that it's interchangeable with the dollar. Things are growing. There's great temperatures, depending on what you're looking for, things like that. So the more I narrowed it down, Panama seemed like the right place to go. So we ended up taking a recon mission there. It was part vacation and part, let's check this out. And we decided not to do it as an all-inclusive, because every all-inclusive you take, you think is the most fantastic vacation in the entire world. And you go, I could live here forever. So we went down there and we spent our time talking to the locals, getting out and just meeting people and just trying to live that short amount of time as if we were actually living there. We liked it. We came back. I didn't say a word to my wife and just waited for her to see what she had going. And she finally said, yeah, I think we should do this. So that's how this all came about.
Did she know she was getting into a scouting trip, or did she think it was a vacation?
She knew. She definitely knew. She was nervous from the get-go, but it was one of those, well, let's go down there. We're never going to know until we go down there and scope it out. And, you know, worst case scenario, we look at it as it was just a vacation.
Do you guys know anyone else who did this? Where did you even get the idea to move to Panama?
No, I don't know anybody else personally that had done. I do now. I'm learning, you know, as we're seeing some more people, I guess, in the FIRE community that do this kind of thing or take mini retirements. Chad from Coach Carson is a perfect example. I think he went to Ecuador for, was it about a year and a half?
Something like that.
Yeah, and loved it. So now it's kind of nice being able to bounce some things off of him to get some of his knowledge. But this was just one of those, hey, what do we got to lose? Let's give it a try type of things.
So how did you get in the position of being able to leave your job and move to Panama? Walk us through Jim's FIRE journey.
Jim's FIRE journey, huh? Okay. So in the early 2000s, I'm 42, probably 43 by the time listeners are hearing this, but in the early 2000s, I had come across Robert Kiyosaki. Yeah, I said it. And I read his books, and that's how I ended up buying that first rental property. That was my first foray into let's make some money type of thing. And that was more about getting rich, I guess. This was my thinking back then was, hey, I just want to be rich. And I didn't really know what that meant. But as we talked about, that didn't go as well as I thought. We made good money on it, but it wasn't as good as I thought. But 2010, my daughter was born, and that became the big incentive for me. When I had to go back to work and I knew my wife was just at home with my daughter, it crushed me. It was really hard for me not to be around her. That was the kick in the pants for me to go, okay, it's time to make this happen. So, you know, I'd always been a good saver and had been going, but now I was looking for every opportunity that I could. So, you know, I finally got to the point I was maxing out the 401k, you know, the Roth IRA, the HSA, pushing everything I could into savings. we ended up buying a second rental property, a duplex, which I was a little better on the numbers on this one. That one we'll be keeping. But yeah, I mean, eventually we just got to the point when we said, yeah, we can do this. But I will add a little piece into this to say, initially, we're planning for Panama because it was maybe 40% less cost of living than it is in Cleveland, which is kind of crazy as it is. But the closer we got and the more my wife and I talked about it, we realized if we don't plan for moving back, we could trap ourselves down there where, hey, we're retired down in Panama, but if we come back to the States, now I got to go back to work. And I don't want that.
You know, that's actually a really important point, and I'm glad that you brought that up because a lot of people find that happening to them when they move over to places like Thailand or Vietnam, where the cost of living is so low and they're good there, but then they can't ever travel home to visit family. They can't ever move back. Like, they're just kind of stuck there.
Yeah, I don't want to be stuck. I'm hoping it works out. I'm hoping we're there forever, but you know, we're giving ourselves at least 1 year. In the meantime, we're building our expenses as if we're still living here. And then we'll go there. And I guess any extra we can count as gravy. And then if we come back, we're good to go.
So tactically, you're saying just from a financial perspective, you saved up enough money so you could retire in Cleveland, but you're going to go to Panama.
That's correct. But I will tell you, no offense, Cleveland, but I will not come back here again. I do not enjoy cold weather. I don't know how I lived here this long. So if we came back, we'd probably move to Tennessee is kind of what we were talking about.
Also a low cost of living area.
Yeah, a great place for retirees too.
Have you considered buying the property in Tennessee now and using it as a rental?
That's a good question, but no, we have not. I think we're taking a little break from getting more rentals right now. We want to kind of feel it out. And I could tell you, we ended up talking to a financial advisor. This was one of the things that I wanted to do. I mean, I'm pretty good understanding all the ins and the outs of things, but I listen to some of these people in the community and I'm just blown away by how well-versed they are in all the intricacies of the planning. So I thought this wouldn't hurt to get a second opinion anyway. So I found someone who was phenomenal. And we went through things. He was confident in the plan. He's the one that actually gave me the go-ahead to move our fire date up to the end of this year. But when I was talking with him, his opinion was that we should plan on renting in Panama, which we were going to do regardless for that first year until we decided we want to stay there. But his opinion was that we just rent the whole time there. And if we come back, it would actually make more sense to buy a property if we move back to Tennessee. He based a lot of the numbers on that type of planning, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, well, and that's interesting too, because when you come back from Panama, if you come back from Panama, you won't have had a job, a W-2 job for a long time. And I've been learning that without W-2 income, it's really difficult to get credit of any kind. Like, I get credit card offers all the time and I applied for one and I got rejected. So wow. I can only imagine how much worse it would be to try and get a mortgage without a W-2 income.
Excellent point. Yes, absolutely. You're absolutely right. The good news is I think we're in a position where we could front a good portion of the cost. So we should be okay on that piece of things.
Yeah. So like I realized when I sold my rental, when I put it on the market, I was like, I will not be able to buy another rental property for a very long time by getting rid of this property. And frankly, I'm okay with that right now.
Wait, what do you mean? Oh, because you currently don't have an income? Is that what you mean?
Because I don't have W-2 income and I don't have 3 or 5 years of entrepreneur income.
Word. Don't you remember the podcast episode we had with Diego? I mean, he can't even get a loan because he grew up undocumented, but he went in with other people. He could do that.
I mean, it's possible. And I mean, I have Eric. So if we wanted to buy property, we would just use the vast majority of his W-2 income as proof of income, even though I could
afford. Sugar daddy?
He is not my sugar daddy, but it would be useful for us to go in together jointly because I have excellent credit and money in the bank and he has a W-2 job. So we're good partners that way.
And that makes sense. And there's other alternatives. You guys obviously know, but I mean, you know, seller financing is a possibility if you're good with working with somebody.
Yeah, also an option. So there's tons of options out there, but just a word to the wise, it is more difficult to get credit or people to give you money when you don't have a traditional W-2 job.
Gwen, did you even think about that when you left your job? Was that like something in your mind, or is that like, oh yeah, that's right, I can't do that?
No, I did think about it. And I did try and buy another property right before I left my W-2 job. But the property that I looked at and made an offer on ended up having a ton of work that needed to be done to it. And so I backed out and didn't have enough time to find another job. And now that this property has been such a headache, I'm very glad that I don't have another property to add to that. So it all worked out in the end.
Very nice.
So talk to us about leaving your job. You recently bumped that up, right?
Yes, the original plan was to leave at the end of 2019, to leave my job. And then, so that would have been December 2019, and then move to Panama the following summer. And we moved everything up a year. I'll be leaving my job at the end of this December, and we'll be moving to Panama next summer. And the reason for the gap is with my daughter, we want to let her finish her year of school out before we take off out of the country.
So why did you move everything up?
You know what? One of the biggest things comes back to the rental property again, that first rental. What I needed in order to make this happen was more money up front. Our big strategy involves doing a Roth IRA conversion ladder, which will give us access to our 401k money. But if you're not familiar with that, basically what that means is the money's moving from, you know, you roll your 401k into an IRA, and then you can do conversions over the years into a Roth IRA. And that's all legal, no penalty. You do pay taxes on it, but the money that you move can't be touched for 5 years. So that means for 5 years, we have to have enough cash to cover our expenses while we're making that happen. And we did not have that. That was my biggest struggle. I was pulling my hair out over. I didn't initially want to sell our rental property, but that turned out to be a great thing, because that, you know, like I said, we've owned that since 2003. So that was a lot of cash we were able to put in our pocket to be able to afford this. That was our biggest thing. You know, and the other thing that I'd like to say is our daughter's still young. So it's a little harder. She was singing Panama this morning, the Van Halen song, but she's still excited about this whole adventure. Eventually, she's going to start getting those ties with her friends and all that, where she's going to freak out if we had pushed this off. So the sooner the better.
So leaving your job to go move to Panama, obviously it requires that you give notice. And you've already given notice for the end of the year, right?
I did.
Why did you give such a big notice?
So I've been with the same company for 19 years. And one of the things that I wanted to do was leave and move to Arizona a number of years ago. And when I went to do that, my boss got with me, and I was an engineer at the time, and he said, hey, why don't you stick around? I'm going to create a new position for you. You'll manage the engineers. And we talked about it, and I thought that was a good idea. So we did. And since then, I've been working with him pretty closely for a lot of years, and I felt he's done good by me. I want to do the same for him. So that's what I'm doing. So I actually gave him a heads up maybe 6 months ago about the initial plans, which was the retiring at the end of 2019. And then just a couple of weeks ago is when I broke the news and said, hey, we decided to move up our date. So he wasn't thrilled, but I'm not too worried. It's going to be different for each person, but deciding when to tell your employer, hey, I'm leaving, it's kind of personal. And for us, this felt like a good amount of time. 6 months gives me enough time to train somebody else, because this is a very unique position. There's nobody else in the company that knows anything about what I do or how I do it. So this will be a good opportunity to transition things over.
Yeah. When I left my job, I gave them, I don't know, 4 to 5 months notice. It was a long time. And everybody told me that I was an idiot for doing that. But I knew it was the right thing to do based on my situation. They have trouble filling that spot with people that would be a good fit. It was working with the executive, so you need a special kind of person to be able to work day in and day out with all the executives. And I knew that it was going to take a while to find somebody and get them trained, and I wanted to help train them before I left. So it worked out great. It took basically all of Christmas and part of January to find somebody, and then took a while to transition out of their job and then ease into working with the new team. And then he was around, so I got to train him for like the last month that I was there. It was a very easy process to transition, and my boss was very, 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 very thankful that I did that because it made his life a lot easier. Some of the other jobs that I've had with the company, I probably wouldn't have done that. I would have given the standard 2 weeks notice to leave because I was replaceable, you know? I wasn't doing anything special. The documentation was up to date. I couldn't train my replacement, so it was easier for me to just leave.
That makes sense.
Sometimes with companies, like when you give your notice, they don't let you sit in the meetings anymore, especially if you're management. So I guess, Jim, because you weren't going to a competitor, that's probably, and you had a longstanding relationship that contributed to it. But I know some places where, you know, you're kind of out once you say that you're out.
And we're also in a smaller company too. I mean, it's only 40 employees. So that makes a difference versus big old megacorp. They have things a little differently how they do them there.
Yeah. I mean, it really helped that everybody knew that I wasn't leaving to go to a different competitor. Like everyone's like, oh no, why are you leaving? And I'm like, well, you know, my boyfriend, he lives in Minneapolis. And they're like, oh, well, I guess we can't compare that. So we won't try. But I mean, that was basically the only reason that I would have been able to leave that job. Otherwise, if I had left that job for a competitor, they probably would have given me less time to be around and restricted my ability to do a lot of things based on the very sensitive nature of the data that we worked with.
That makes sense.
Shay, how much notice do you think you would give to your employer?
Not answering that question, Jim. I did want to ask you, though, one of our listeners emailed us and said, can you share savings rates and numbers? And Jim, because you share your net worth on your blog, I was hoping that you could be the guest to take a swing at that. Can you kind of provide some numerical backing to how you can retire at your age and move to Panama?
Yeah. So we used to save a lot more, but when my wife was working, but she left her job. It's been probably about a year or so now, but now, with just me working, our personal savings rate's about 60%, which I think is pretty good with a daughter and everything and one income. So I push everything that I can into the pre-tax accounts. You know, with the 401k, I max that out because we have an incredible match, and it's matched all the way up to the max.
Whoa, that's awesome.
Yeah, 35 cents on the dollar. There's no way to pass that up. And that's part of why I ran into that cash problem of having enough saved up to cover that 5 years, because, you know, how do you save in your taxable accounts when you'd be passing up that big of a match? That's my biggest thing there. Like I said, max out the Roth IRA, and then we push a lot into savings. One of the more controversial topics is college for our daughter. You know, some people want to pay for college for their children, which is A-okay. For us, I don't want to pay for her college completely. I'd like to give her something, but I want her to have some skin in the game. So we put a little bit into a 529, but it's nothing excessive.
So you mentioned that you are saving towards retirement in Cleveland or Tennessee, I guess. But at the same time, you realize that you probably could have saved less if you were just going straight up Panama. If someone wasn't as concerned with having a backup plan, like what would you target for Panama? Is there certain like, oh, we think it's going to cost $3,000 a month to live there, and therefore we need $700,000, or, you know, kind of, can you give people an idea numbers wise, if you just chose the Panama route, what the numbers would look like?
It's going to be different for everyone. We live pretty modestly. We don't live as modestly as, you know, if you read magazines like International Living or something like that, they're going to tell you, you can live comfortably on your Social Security check out there and be good to go. That's not necessarily the case, because the problem is down there, you're dealing with, if you'd live like you're a local completely, yeah, you might be able to pull that off. But if you're like, hey, I really want some mac and cheese or something like that, your price goes up a little bit. Things kind of change. You know, if you're going to an American restaurant versus a Panamanian restaurant and things like that. But for us, I think that we're looking at, I think we'd be pretty good with 35 a year would get us by, and we'd be in good shape. Some people want to live in some huge fancy place down there, and that's going to cost you. I mean, the real estate is still cheaper than a lot of the places here, but that doesn't kick into that 40% cost of living. It's a little more, that's one of their more expensive things that's gone up in the past decade. So I guess it just kind of depends on how you want to live. We want to keep living modestly, but be able to do things like vacation, even though that's kind of a permanent vacation. But we want to be able to get out, eat out at restaurants, meet up with people, attend different events, have some fun, but nothing too excessive. So I think 35 is a fair number for that.
Yeah. When I was in Panama City, I went to this amazing Panamanian rum bar. Oh, the rum was fantastic, but it was probably expensive by Panama terms. So if you want to go to that.
I'll mention this too. You know, the area that you live in out there makes a difference as well. Panama City is comparable to New York City or Miami. That's kind of what they compare it to. So you're going to see some extraordinary prices there versus, like, we're looking at Boquete, which is closer to Costa Rica. We'd be in the mountains. It's a nice expat community. It's a simpler life, and that's kind of what we're after. And that's kind of the numbers that I'm bringing up. If you want to live in Panama City, you better plan on you would, like, if you were living in New York or Miami.
Wow, that much.
Okay, so you said 35,000. So with the 4% withdrawal rule, so you multiply that number by 25, you get 875,000. So that's what we're saying is kind of like your target for the average family who, what you're saying, the lifestyle that you mentioned, like being able to go out to eat and do things and not go crazy spending, but not really scrimp either.
Yeah, I would say that'd be fair. Yeah.
Okay, cool. And then in terms of how much you think in the U.S., like a Tennessee lifestyle, do you have a number or target that you think you're shooting for?
So we base that off of 48K a year. And the biggest expense for us, if we come back, is going to be healthcare, obviously. Just like anybody in the fire community, that's that one. We just don't really know what it's going to be. We'd probably look at, if I remember right, Gwen, aren't you doing Liberty HealthShare?
I did go with Liberty, yeah.
That was the one we would probably consider. And we're actually going to probably use that for the 6 months once I quit my job until we leave, just so we have some type of coverage at a cheaper rate. But yes, so 48K is the number we're kind of using right now.
What's 48,000 times 25, Jay?
Ooh, a lot of math.
1.2 million.
So there's what, like, there's like $400,000 difference between living in Tennessee and living in Panama?
Yep. You have a very nice, like, financial plan, which we'll link to in the show notes, that shows this is how the next 3 years, what we're going to plan to do financially. We're going to do the Roth conversion ladder. We're going to do this. And then the next 3 years, we're going to do this. That was a very good way to lay it out. So thank you. I'll definitely link to that so listeners can get more details from you. But technically, a lot of people probably wouldn't need to save that much because you can pull a Gwen and try to do the entrepreneurial thing and make money in some other capacity. I mean, I'm sure with your experience, you could do consulting if you wanted to, but I bet you don't want to.
Yeah, that's the other piece that I wanted to do is, I actually just wrote a post about that recently too, is I don't want to plan our numbers as if we're going back to work. I don't want to be forced to go back to work. I've done it long enough now, but I anticipate that we're going to make some money. I enjoy doing the blog, and right now that's starting to make some money. I imagine once we're out there, I'll be able to spend some more time with it. That's going to bring in more money. So all of this, I just, like I said, I just kind of consider it gravy, any extra. But I don't want to plan on doing any regular work, I guess you could say, if I don't have to.
Got it. So we can move off the numbers topic. The last thing I want to talk to you about is, where are you getting this information from about Panama? Do you have friends down there already? Do you have a community that you think your daughter is going to be part of? Are there like Facebook groups? How are you visualizing what your life would actually be like?
So I guess it started out, like I said, whittling down the different places. Once we kind of figured out Panama, that was because I did a lot of digging into it. We made the trip down there. We learned quite a bit there. We were able to actually see some of the prices, see what we're dealing with. There's a site called Numbeo, N-U-M-B-E-O, which is fantastic at comparing pricing. It's crowdsourced and it lets you compare different places. Hey, here's how much it costs to live in Cleveland. Here's how much an inexpensive meal is in Cleveland. Here's how much it'll cost you in Boquete, Panama. Things like that. It'll break everything down for you. I'm not going 100% off of it, but it kind of gets into the ballpark. So that's a piece of things. Yes, Facebook. My wife recently, I've been in the Facebook groups for a while now. She just got into them and she is hooked. She said she's on there 24/7 looking and reading and learning. We're trying to take in as much that we can, but we know when we actually get down there, it's not going to be everything we're expecting. There'll be some things that'll be better. There'll be some things that will be harder, that we'll have a big learning curve, and we'll just figure it out then.
Can you send us one or two of the Facebook groups and we can put it in the show notes?
Sure, absolutely.
Cool.
Okay, so I have two things. One, what are you going to do for healthcare in Panama? Do they have like a national healthcare? Like, how's that working out?
Now we're talking. These are the questions that I like. Yeah, the healthcare in Panama is kind of interesting because that was one of my big concerns going down there. So we talked to a bunch of people down there, and believe it or not, a lot of the expats that are down there don't even have insurance at all, which I think is kind of crazy. But, you know, if you go to the doctor down there, you're probably going to end up paying $25. And that is out the door. That's not your copay. That's no insurance. That's your cost. And then you go, well, I don't want to deal with these voodoo doctors down there and stuff. But what you're dealing with is people that get their training in the U.S., France, Mexico. I mean, they have a Cleveland Clinic down there, down in Panama City, or Cleveland Clinic affiliate in Panama City where you were, Gwen. So you have that ability where the costs are low. But I'm nervous about that for two reasons. One is, if you get something, what if you get cancer or something like that? I mean, that's horrible, obviously, but those costs could add up over time, even at the low prices of Panama. But two, we plan on coming back to the U.S. quite a bit to visit. So we don't want to be without health coverage here. You know, we're getting a big car accident driving from point A to point B while we're here, or flying, or whatever the case is, then we could really be up a creek. So once we move down there, we're going to be getting international health coverage through Cigna. And right now, just kind of looking at it, I know it's a little ways off, but it'll probably run us about $500 a month for the three of us. And that covers us as long as we're out of the U.S. for 180 days out of the year. That will cover us completely, whether we need health care down there or up here.
Can you live in the U.S. and also use that?
No, that would be smart, right? That would be wonderful. And I dug into that. But no, you have to be outside of your home country for basically half the year.
Got it.
Yeah, there's limits and fine print in the travel insurance plans, as I found. Okay, so number two, I just got word through my fancy little phone here that the offer was accepted by the seller. So I'm officially mm-hmm. selling my house.
Nice
and
job.
It should be done by mid-August. So yay!
Party!
I'm so
party.
Happy we can do this live on the podcast.
This is so exciting.
Cool. Oh, I'm so happy.
Let's do some shots.
Yeah, exactly.
Shots. I'm buying a bottle of champagne. Watch me.
You deserve it.
I will pop that mofo. Done.
Boom. All right. Well, I don't think we can top that. So I think it's time for the final two.
It is time for the final two. So, Jim, if people would like to get a hold of you, where can they find you?
They could find me at routetoretire.com. I am Route to Retire everything. Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, Google Plus. Does anybody still use that one anymore?
I love Google Plus.
I'm probably most active on Twitter. That's probably the easiest place to reach out to me.
Awesome. Okay, Jay, you want to ask the final question?
Jim, what is your most outrageous, wildest dream?
Mine's actually, it might be kind of boring. I'm not sure, because it's more realistic. I don't want to be invisible or fly or anything. Those would be cool. My biggest dream would actually be to live on a cruise ship. That's what I want. I would love to just travel the world, be catered to, and do all of that. And I saw actually that John from ESI Money did a post on that recently. He said, oh yeah, I think we could actually do that. And I was so jealous. I think that would be the most wonderful thing in the world. Every day you wake up and you're in a different country or at sea. Oh, I'm excited. I want to do it now.
We'll definitely link to that post in the show notes. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Jim. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on. I definitely appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Go to our website, firedrillpodcast.com, to continue the discussion and get the link to our private Facebook group.
If you like us, leave us a review on iTunes. If you're like me, you have no idea how to do that. So, in the podcast app or in iTunes, search for Fire Drill Podcast, find it, click the Reviews tab, and write something to make my mother proud of me. We read every single review and want to say thank you from the bottom of our hearts for making this podcast possible.